Today is Thursday. It's December 13th, 2018. It's 11:13 in the morning. Hi, I'm John Williams. This is The Mincing Rascals, a podcast we record Thursdays from the studios at WGN Radio and near a pool in Mexico. With more, here's Steve Bertrand.
I'm Steve Bertrand, host of The Business Lunch in WGN Radio.
And I'm Eric Zorn. I'm the cheerful columnist from the Chicago Tribune. And I wish I were in Mexico right now, too, in many ways.
We're at the Iberostar Resort in Riviera Maya, Mexico, with the White Sox tour. It's called Sox on the Beach. So Apple Vacations, the White Sox, and WGN Radio have gotten together to send producer Elif and I and Sarah and Bill from the staff. And we're here broadcasting all week long. And
all by right, the way, have you been to Playa del Carmen yet?
No, I haven't been outside this complex. My plan is to go over to Cozumel Friday or Saturday and do some snorkeling. The surf is so high today, though, that you can't even rent a wave runner or a catamaran or anything.
Oh, man, I feel so bad for you. So bad. It's really a shame.
So I'll just grin and, you know, bear it, I guess.
Oh, man, John, we feel for you here so much. The great thing, though, is it's like 35 degrees out here and sunny. It's a perfectly normal kind of late November-ish, early December-ish day here.
That's not so bad.
You're not really getting the advantage of being in Mexico and gloating.
Oh, yes, I am. Okay, Scott Stanis may join us in minutes. So when Scott strolls in, he'll be part of the mix. Donald Trump's fixer, one-time Sean Hannity attorney and former deputy finance chair for the RNC, Michael Cohen, is going to jail for 3 years. Your colleague Rex Hubke, Eric, pointed out in today's Tribune, another not-her person has been locked up. What jumps out at me is how stupid his smorgasbord of crimes is, lying to Congress about a date related to a Trump project in Russia, lying to Congress about that date. Even the hush money thing was, in my mind, better handled by confessing to or ignoring the problem. Trump won after the Access Hollywood tape came out, remember? And kudos to mincing rascal Eric Zorn, who immediately pointed out months ago when this story came to light that however unseemly this thing was, the hush money payments, viewing it as an illegal campaign contribution, which I thought was a trivial matter, could, Eric said, ultimately doom Cohen or Trump or both. So, Eric, start your gloating.
Well, it could certainly do that. As I read these stories, I find myself not particularly outraged by this. I mean, I know it's wrong. I know they were trying to cover it up. First of all, let's look at the premise that if Trump supporters had heard that he had had sex with a porn star and paid this woman off not to talk about it, that they would have changed their vote. I think it's wrong. I don't think that this thing's changed the election.
Bertrand thinks it does.
I think it's sort of technical. And it's, to me, it does remind me a little bit of Bill Clinton committing perjury about sex, which is that it doesn't rise to the level of really – I mean, there's so much about Trump that outrages me. This kind of doesn't, I have to say.
What is it, alternative history? Is that that exercise of, you know, if you were to go back and pretend
right.
if this or that had happened, is it alternative history?
Counterfactual?
Counterfactual, okay. So I kind of agree with you, Eric, except if you go back to when those payments would have been disclosed, they would have been disclosed just after the Access Hollywood tape came out, right? So it would have been another sort of boulder on the hill. And we're only looking at 33,000 votes around the country. So I think that they probably were wise to pay off these women to keep it quiet because it might have made a difference.
I'll give you this, Steve. I think that maybe at that time people's votes were a little more flexible. I think the Trump supporters today are more hardened. And so I'm assuming they were then as they are today. And that is screw you, screw the media. He's our guy. He's fighting for America. And anything he does will be tolerable to them. But maybe, Steve, huh? Persuade me of this. At the time, our mind was more fungible on this issue.
Well, at the time, everyone thought that the Access Hollywood tape, I was overseas when it came out, everyone thought it was going to do him in. It didn't do him in. It certainly did damage to him. Had there been this disclosure that he was having sex with or having an affair when his son was 10 months old and then paying hush money to keep it quiet, that would have had a negative impact as well. I mean, it certainly wouldn't have added to his vote total.
Wouldn't have helped.
But let me say that, Eric, yep. You're right, but I don't think this is impeachable stuff. Even though
that's not what Michael Cohen's going to jail for, Steve. That's not what would impeach Donald Trump, having the affair or the hush money. It's the illegal campaign contributionness of it, or the lying to Congress about the details in Cohen's case, right?
I think the lying to Congress, the judge said something that was like a 2 or 3 month part of the sentence. So most of it was the campaign fraud and stuff. Yes, that's why he's going to jail. But if you're going to impeach Trump over that, if he's conspirator one or whatever, and
individual one,
not conspirator one,
unindicted co-conspirator.
John, that's Scott Stannis walked in. So ixnay on any more comments about Scott.
Hi, Scott. Thanks for joining us.
Hi, John. Where are you?
He's in Mexico, and if you listen closely, it sounds like there's a water aerobics class going on behind.
That's because literally there is.
I know it.
That is people throwing tennis balls at a hoop set up in the pool next to a waterfall. That's what I'm watching as we discuss this.
That was an Aztec game played to the death, wasn't it?
Okay, so Scott, jump in on this now. We're talking about Michael Cohen going to jail and what this means to the president. But, Eric, you were about to load up on what I thought was a big thought there. No. Okay.
So which one of us is talking?
No, it's coming.
Well, what of us?
I think not. No, I mean, I guess my thought was that just that it was all baked into the cake that Donald Trump was a dog. And the question on the table, Scott, is whether if the porn star stuff had come out when it was going to come out, right around the Access Hollywood tape, if this would have doomed Trump's candidacy. And in retrospect, it doesn't seem like it would have.
No, of course not. No, this man, on video, word for word, it's okay to grab women by the... I mean, that I swore to God that was the end of this campaign. There's not one woman in the country who would vote for this guy. And at the end of the day, it was almost 48% of women who voted for Donald
Trump.
More
white women voted for him than not.
This is off topic a little bit, but what if we hadn't bleeped the word? And I think today we wouldn't have, you know. I mean, we use shithole. The anchors were saying that on the air. I think it would have had a greater impact had we actually heard him use the word.
Well,
no,
we did know the word. What are you telling me? That in the replay of the Access Hollywood tape?
Yeah, when they bleeped out the word that he used.
Right. Okay. So what about that? What are you suggesting?
I'm saying I think it would have been more. I think it today, the media would have not bleeped the word. They would use it. That's how far we've moved. And I think it would have had a greater impact had they not bleeped the word.
Wow. Boy, I felt the full impact of that word and everything that it. You know, I don't think bleeping the word insulated Donald Trump from any of the fallout. Maybe it did. But I still think we're on the wrong point here. And that is, okay, he did that. But it seems to me like the things that are sending Michael Cohen to jail and that are going to be problematic for Donald Trump aren't that. Because you can pay hush money to women to keep quiet about an affair. That can be a legal transaction. The problem is lying to Congress about the date or any of these other details or the campaign contribution of it.
Well, it's a campaign, John, it's a campaign finance violation. It's a felonious one, but there's an interesting little wrinkle in this law. You know, they usually say ignorance of the law is no excuse. It turns out that with campaign finance laws, ignorance of the law is an excuse. That if you didn't know that what you were doing was wrong, that you're not going to be culpable. So.
But the president is also saying that his attorney is the one that's culpable. It's, you know, it's incumbent upon the attorney to know the law. And if something wrong happens here, this is his tweet today, Thursday, he's saying it's his liability, not mine.
That could be right. I mean, that could be accurate. I hadn't seen that tweet, but that's fundamentally correct. That if Trump doesn't know that this is a problem, all he's doing is paying hush money to a porn star, which is not illegal, as you point out.
All he's doing.
Well, who among us hasn't? Come on. Guys. Between us.
By the way, that's the president's second. That's my second favorite tweet of the president's today. The other was when he said that, well, it turns out Mexico is paying for the wall because of all the money we're saving with NAFTA. That the money we're saving from with the new NAFTA deal makes up for the money we're going to spend, and so that essentially means Mexico is paying for the wall.
Sort of explains the 9 bankruptcies, doesn't it?
Okay, I'm going to move on to another topic unless anybody else has anything else to say about Cohen going to jail. Maybe one fair question is 36 months, should he count himself lucky, or does, you know, what do you guys make of that sentence?
That seems fair to me. It really does. I mean, he knew he was lying. He knew that he was passing information over to the White House, which, you know, is strictly, you know, bad. So it seems to me fair.
Although you compare that to Michael Flynn probably going to get no jail time, General Flynn, and his excuse was, well, the FBI was being nice to me, so I thought it was okay to lie to them.
Well, Cohen was trying to have it both ways, right? He was cooperating with the special prosecutor, but not with the Southern District of New York. And they said, if you're going to, and I didn't know about this, but we're all getting an education, right? If you decide, okay, I'm going to turn state's evidence, I'm going to cooperate with the feds, then you have to cooperate with all of them about everything. And if you say, okay, I'll admit to these crimes and those crimes, but I'm not going to participate in another part of an investigation or even an ensuing investigation, then as far as the Southern District is concerned, the deal's off. And I think that's why he's going to go to jail as long as he is.
I think you're right, John.
Okay, new topic. Here we go. Donald Trump's fixer. That's one. What about this one? It was such reality TV that one CNN political commentator appeared on television literally munching on popcorn. Of course, was the discussion broadcast live between Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Nancy Pelosi, and Chuck Schumer about the wall funding and the budget deadline next Friday. Who won that exchange? Eric Zorn, go.
Pence did. He sat there like a potted plant. No, I strongly feel like Schumer and Pelosi lured him into taking ownership of this possible shutdown, and I think that they goaded him into saying something that he will regret saying. I think those two totally won that exchange. And any contention to the contrary that this is Trump winning this campaign is insane.
I'll quote John Cass in today's Chicago Tribune. Yes. President Trump won the meeting. Close quotes.
I stand by what I said. There is no way that he won that meeting. What did he get out of that meeting? He got out of that meeting that ownership. Cass's contention is based on this idea that Democrats want open borders. And if you want to base your argument on that false, malign interpretation of Democratic border policy, then fine, go ahead. But that is not the case.
I have a different view.
The Democrats are offering like $1.8 billion in enhanced border security. They just don't want to build this stupid wall. And we don't need the wall. And it is.
What do you care
totally
so much
symbolic.
About the wall? We've got it's 0.1% of the budget, maybe less than that. You're already at 1.8. If you're at 1.8, you got 5. Give him the damn money and then be done with this. Otherwise, you shut the government down.
You don't shut the government down because he owns it. He just said he owned it. He said, I am willing to shut the government down.
Fine.
The Democrats aren't shutting it
down.
Well,
the government will be shut down, and you could have opened it up.
Well, so could he.
You know what?
So
could Trump. First of all,
you blame him? They don't need this wall. We do not need this wall.
Scott
it is unnecessary.
Scott is dying to get a word in, so I'm going to interrupt him first.
Okay.
So what? They're going to shut the government down. So what? It's going to be shut down for 10 days. All the workers who we worry about are going to get their back pay. And, you know, now it doesn't matter anymore. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Scott.
No, two things. Firstly, I think both sides won and both sides, the American people, lost in the exchange because you and I, Eric, have been covering this crap for decades. And they sit in the office and they say nice things in front of the cameras and then the cameras go away. And that's where the negotiations start. The nasty gram started to fly almost off the bat. I thought Trump won for his side. He seemed tough. He seemed to stand up to the bullying of Pelosi and Schumer.
Bullying.
I'm telling you, Democrats and the Republicans, his base loved what he did.
Wait, he's sitting there saying, well, I know Nancy can't really talk.
Calling them by their first names. They're calling him Mr. President. He's calling them by their first names. And they're not being respectful? Come on.
I'm just telling you what I'm hearing on Fox.
How is she disrespectful?
On Fox.
Yeah, okay, fine. Yeah.
Fox,
well,
okay.
You can't dismiss that. What are you hearing?
I'm hearing that here's what I'm hearing about Nancy, and this is across all platforms. That red coat that she wore is rocking the fashion world. That has actually been seen as a statement. It's been reissued and sold out. Her body language, her choice of words, her choice of clothes. A lot of people are saying that she won if nobody else.
Well, that's unfortunate because she was the only woman in the room. And if we're talking about how she dressed and what they're selling, that's too bad.
Well, we are talking about Vice President Pence. Who
that's an illegitimate observation, and I think you're right, Scott. It's as germane as the vice president's composure, which was kind of hilarious, wasn't it?
It was. Well, it seemed like the best meme I've seen so far is someone said, me, me. that starts with me. These edibles aren't that strong. Me. 30 minutes later, it's a picture.
Well, one of the shots has him looking down at the floor, and he's saying to himself in a thought bubble, I'm going to change the carpet.
I heard they were shooting a Washington version of Weekend at Bernie's.
Oh, man. Pence had his hands on his knees like Elf on a Shelf, and he was not saying or doing anything.
He wasn't moving. I'm not sure he was breathing. I got to tell you something. This is kind of sad, actually, but coming from an abusive background, this is what you did when your parents got into one of those weird screaming matches, or there's some kind of weird dysfunction going on, is you just sat at your and just stayed stock still and stared at the floor,
waited for it to go away, hoped it would go away.
I just want to say, I enjoyed it. I think there was some value to it, because all we do is hear these people trash talking about each other. I did enjoy the fact that there was, you know, a fairly honest exchange there, and we got to watch that.
Yeah.
I think there's something there.
Do you guys agree with him on that? Because we had a disagreement on the radio about that this week, and I, like Steve, think that the openness of that conversation, I don't think it was pretentious. I think that was an honest exchange like all of Americans are having, and lo and behold, it's the deciders that are having it.
Yeah,
I thought the transparency was cool.
I thought it was fine, but I think that if you believe that Democrats are in favor of open borders, don't want any border security, just want immigrants to flood into this country.
No,
unchecked.
Well, Scott, why do you care about that point?
Because that's what he says.
But that's bullshit. Nobody buys that.
But that's what the president of the United States says, and apparently you're watching Fox, where they believe it.
I don't believe it, Steve, and I don't even think they believe
it. That's the talking point. That's what this cast column says,
exactly that, which is basically Democrats are in favor of open borders. If you believe that, and you believe, therefore, that we need to spend $5 billion on a wall that we could spend on education, on law enforcement, on anything else that might actually help somebody in this country that we need, if you think that that's just a nugatory amount, then yeah, Trump won that battle, and we're going to have 10 days where national parks aren't open, and then afterwards everyone's going to get paid, like every government shutdown. It ends up just being this ridiculous little bit of theater that hardly anybody gets hurt. Then you can say Trump won. But otherwise, I thought he looked like a child.
He always looks like a child, though, and that's what plays to his base. That comes back to my point. The second point, though, is that his base doesn't understand, and like most, like 90% of Americans can't do math, shutdowns are actually really expensive. They're not harmless. They don't save us money, because it sounds like, you know, for the 10 days, we're going to be, you know, the government, so we'll be able to pocket that savings. That's not how it works, people. It actually is very expensive to do this. It's expensive to start it off, and anyone who considers themselves fiscally responsible would never do it. But this guy in this White House has never proven itself to be fiscally responsible. And since the deficit just hit, what, $22 trillion this week?
Yeah, it went up.
Senator Durbin was on WGN with Steve Cochran this morning, and I'm sorry I don't have the exact statistics, but he said he was at the border or something, and 80%, I'm going to do my best to get as close as I can to the numbers. 80% of the opioids that are being used in this country are coming in over the border. It's some huge number. They're being driven in from Mexico. They're not being detected at the border. They're coming in, cars coming in legally, because we don't have the technology to stop and check every truck or to check every vehicle for them. And he said the cost of that was something like $100 million. It was a small number when you compare it to building the wall. And the senator's point was, look, if we've got this crisis, we've got the ability to stop it from coming into Mexico. That's the border security we should be spending money on, not a wall.
He's exactly right, because the amount of drugs and even the number of people who are actually walking across these areas that ought to have a wall or drug mules, that's a very small number. It's actually right that the number of people coming in this country illegally are coming in through the open
legal
doors,
crossing.
or they're flying in from other countries and they're just overstaying their visas. We want to spend $5 billion for a symbol. That's what Donald Trump wants, is a symbol. And maybe you can sell that to his crazy base, but you're not selling it to the American people, I don't think.
I'll give you another statistic, and it's different than yours, Steve, but I saw this yesterday and again today. According to the DEA, this is in 2015, I don't think it's much different now, 95% of the drugs entering illegally into the United States come in container ships and other vessels. I don't know if vessels means trucks at the border, but it's not people. It's not the caravan. It's not the migrants that are coming up.
It's not those 10 terrorists that they've captured?
Yeah, that's another number that even as he was saying that to Chuck Schumer, I thought, oh, we're going to revisit that number. And that seems to be an odd number. And, you know, Trump grabbed that little factoid from somewhere and made it into something that it really wasn't. Okay, I got another topic for you guys. This made me laugh today. Today's Fox News exclusive with a banner headline on their website, Party's Over, President Trump Cancels Annual White House Holiday Bash for the Press. Now, I think it could go either way, but if I had to decide if the president and the press corps covering him should cozy up for a Christmas time party, I would say yes. In general, that's a good idea. But this year, it would only be judgy and awkward. I can see Rachel Maddow posing by Melania's red trees. An event like this should be a binding one, but let's just minimize the pretense and the damage. I'd say this is a good call by the administration not to have a Christmas party for the press this year. Steve, what do you think?
I think it's probably petty and silly. I mean, I think sometimes you just have to do these things. I mean, you know, it looks worse for you if you cancel it, I think.
I'm putting you in charge, Steve. Are you you holding the party or not?
Yeah, absolutely.
Scott, you going to host the party this
year? Absolutely, because, well, I'm a grown-up.
Well, yeah, but they're not. Well, okay, fine. I'll stop interjecting my thoughts.
I would not. I would never hold a party like this. I would never go to a party like this. I think it's unseemly for politicians and the people who cover them to party together. I mean, I don't think it should ever have happened.
It's a tradition for years. After Bill Clinton was impeached that Christmas, he still hosted this party. Republicans have done it. Democrats have done it. And I think like Scott said, wasn't it you, Scott? Adults should be able to behave this way, differences aside. These reporters whose moms and dads are so proud of them get to attend if they're the plus one, or at least get a picture of their son or daughter standing with the first and second families.
Oh, no, that's just awful. Come on. that should never have been a tradition.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
So
I'm
Eric's canceling the party.
I wouldn't.
I've
met with Mayor Emanuel. I'm on friendly terms with Mayor Emanuel. If Mayor Emanuel held up a party for the press, I wouldn't go.
Really?
Oh, yeah, absolutely not.
That's a better party without you. Speaking of
Trump, as you can tell, I'm such a downer.
I know, really. Eric's standing there by the punch bowl going, we shouldn't even be here.
That's exactly what
Tim should die.
The governor-elect is in Washington today meeting with the president.
Yeah.
That's a meeting that should be had, right? Trump is meeting with all the new governors, and JB's among them.
Oh, a meeting, of course, yeah.
Okay. I don't mind that, although I wonder how much good is going to come of that. Outgoing Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel, the one that won't be going to Eric's party, or Eric won't be going to his, said there are 4 public pension funds that need financing, refinancing, and the time to act is now, Rahm Emanuel says. So the state should grant Chicago a casino and legalize recreational marijuana and dedicate the funds that the city would get to those debts. Who's in? Scott, you like what the mayor's suggesting?
Oh, it's a horrible name. First of all, that bug-eyed little weasel is all of a sudden recognizing that there's a pension.
We are in our holiday finest, aren't we? My goodness.
He's the one who wanted the party, too.
No, I'm serious. He's finally recognizing as he's walking out the damn door that there's a pension problem. He's kicked this can down the road so far that now we're having this balloon payment of billions of dollars the city doesn't have. And he's looking at, and so my cartoon today actually quotes the great Dean Wormer. From Animal House, saying, you know, fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life. But Rahm says, but stoned and broke at the casino is.
Okay, so you don't like Rahm Emanuel, but that's the pickle we're in, Scott. What about the idea? I mean, isn't that a way to raise money?
It is a victim's tax. It's going after, first of all, marijuana, legalizing marijuana, which is sweeping the nation only because it brings in large amounts of tax revenue. We don't know what it does. We have no mean test to show you at what level of inebriation you can even drive a car. So we don't have any of that. Couple that with, we're going to send people to casinos to take their money away. Effectively, we're going to be strong-arming the citizens of Chicago, taking their money.
It's a volunteer tax, Scott.
It is, and I, you know, there's a libertarian side of me that thinks that's great, but should the city be in part of that?
So
no.
Here's the solution. Who was talking about the city tax? Was that was the mayor, right?
Commuter tax.
Commuter tax.
Yeah,
so that was Bill Daley.
Bill Daley. Okay, right. So the next mayor. So
sure.
What we need to do is legalize marijuana only in Chicago. and Chicago gets the revenue.
Oh, nice.
The suburbanites will come in, they'll pay for it, and the money gets goes that way, and you don't pay for a commuter tax.
I like cockfighting. I think that's just there's a community out there that enjoys that.
He's in Mexico.
It's wagering. We could tax that.
Well, one thing that you didn't mention that Rahm also talked about, which is that he's getting behind an idea to amend the state constitution to remove the pension protections for public workers.
Yeah.
Now that makes sense.
And this is something that the Tribune editorial board has certainly been behind, and the unions are opposed to, and incoming Governor J.B. Pritzker said it's not going to go anywhere.
Speaking on behalf of people who do not have guaranteed raises, I will quote from the Tribune's editorial on that today. Here's what Rahm proposes. Amend the Illinois Constitution's pension clause that in effect says the retirement benefits in force on an employee's first day cannot be changed for the rest of his or her life. Scale back the too generous 3% compounded cost of living adjustments that most retirees receive. I think that makes great sense. If you get that benefit, you won't like it. But first of all, the cost of living isn't going up 3+% every year. It's not going up at all, and it can't be afforded. So somebody's got to get screwed, and now it's your turn. I think that that's a fair, and again, I don't receive the benefit, but I think that's a reasonable resolution.
Well, what they did in Arizona, voters in Arizona had repealed, they had a sort of similar pension protection clause there, and they repealed it very narrowly. They chose a couple of pension funds, and they had a couple of little tweaks they did. It wasn't like they just did a wholesale, like, that's no longer valid. They did a modification of their pension guarantee. And I think, for instance, this 3% compounded COLA every year, as Emmanuel pointed out, he said that, you know, it's not a COLA because, you know, the cost of living is not going up. It's just a raise, and it is a raise compounded, and it is a raise that we can't afford.
And it's a raise above what the standard worker's been enjoying in this country for the past 15 years, right? I mean, if you look at the typical annual raise, it's not been 3%.
Are you kidding? In the last 10 years, I'll bet most people have averaged 1%, maybe. I mean,
right.
The raise for 5 years was you get to keep your job and maybe a pay cut. And now we've all been catching up. But if you start when, pick a number, 2007, and say, how are you doing now compared to then? You're making more, but you haven't gotten 3% every year. No way.
See, I think this is the kind of thing that would be good to have a referendum on. And it's the kind of thing that Democrats, I guess, now will be able totally to block having a referendum on this. That you can't do it by citizen initiative, which you could do. You can do in Arizona. Arizona's an initiative state. And it's the kind of thing that voters ought to weigh in on. And I know that the unions will say that this was a promise that was made to these people when they took the job. And so maybe they took the job based on that promise. It's not fair to make a promise to someone and take it away. This is Pritzker's argument. And there's some resonance to that. Voters will have some resonance. It only passed like by 52-48 or something like that in Arizona, where they're having a similar but not as large a pension shortfall problem.
Here's how we're going to solve
it. So it's the kind of thing that needs to be publicly litigated since it's a public matter.
The mayor also likes the idea of increasing the tax rate for high income wage earners in the state, have a graduated income tax. Are you guys okay with that?
I am, yes. Yeah. I'm totally on
it. It seems fair.
Yeah, right. Okay.
And Scott?
You just know hijinks are going to ensue. Let me just put it that way. That, you know, we're going to tax the rich. And by rich in Illinois, it means that if you have a job, that's what this is going to mean.
Hijinks will be if the city or state gets its hand on a casino. I mean, I know we have them. I didn't realize how rampant slots are across the state until this week when people told me that the gas stations and mom-and-pop shops, they've got them. I haven't been paying attention. But if the city of Chicago was the owner-operator of or the maybe licensed grantor to a casino downtown somewhere, can you just imagine how stinky that whole proposition would be? I have no confidence in their ability
almost
to run it ethically.
Almost as stinky as Ed Burke running the, what, which pension plan does he run by himself?
Oh, no kidding.
You're in workers' compensation.
Workers' comp, yeah. Yeah, nothing goes wrong there. Nothing. Nothing to see here, folks.
By the way, just one last way to raise money. In California, they're considering taxing text messages.
Good Lord.
No. California considers charging residents a tax for sending text messages.
Is this on a, like a text package or on, it's not going to be on an individual text?
You would
right?
think so that it would be like if you got a date, something.
You got a data package, then there'd be a text.
No, they might charge based on the individual text.
Would it be higher for an emoji than a letter?
That's a great question, Steve.
No, it's not.
Because I want to get rid of the emojis, so I'd be happy with that.
I am anti-emoji myself.
This is a great example of a state that overtaxes, that taxes everything and is looking for something, anything else to tax instead of being, fiscally responsible. So this is that's a cautionary tale for Illinois as well.
It's almost time for a little bit of a... Go ahead, Eric.
Okay, I just want to know if anybody has any mayoral race updates. I thought something very interesting happened, that the chief spokeswoman for Amara Enya's campaign dropped out unexpectedly, was it yesterday, and just sent a note saying, due to things that I didn't know about, I'm leaving the campaign right now.
Well, and then...
Charles Thomas, former right. ABC7, and I don't know exactly what the sequence of events was there, but the implication behind this spokeswoman dropping out of the campaign, and I've been saying all along that I think Amara Enya is a force to be reckoned with. I don't think she's going to be elected, but I think she's going to be a player in this race. I don't know what this means, but I thought it was a pretty stunning development on this fairly minor campaign.
What are we hearing?
I haven't heard anything.
Nothing so far.
But then today Charles Thomas, was announced.
Seems to be a credible player.
Right? Yes.
When I saw that, I thought, okay, that I thought added a little heft to her campaign.
Charles Thomas, for sure, yeah.
I didn't realize the reason the position was available. That's worrisome to me, Eric.
I don't know which came first. It may have been that he came in as a strategist and she was the spokeswoman. But I don't know if those are related. This is why it's sort of mysterious. So it's pretty interesting. The petition challenges are going on hot and heavy this week. I talked to the people at the Board of Elections, and they said that some of the people who seem to be on the ballot now, there are 11 of them who haven't been challenged. I think 11 or 10 haven't been challenged. But the guy at the Board of Elections, Jim Allen, said that some of them just don't conform, and that they will be automatically taken off.
Oh, really?
But they're minor candidates you haven't heard of. I mean, you see this list of names and people. Who is that? Those people. Some of them are going to go because their petitions aren't.
So the number is what? Do you have a guess? Like it's 17 at the moment, but
I'm going to guess 12 candidates by the time all is said and done.
Wow. Oh, no kidding. So, on the ballot. All right, let's go around the table as we wrap this part of the podcast up. How many candidates will be on the ballot, the official ballot for mayor? Bertrand, go.
Boy, I have no clue, so I'll just follow Eric and say 12.
Good idea.
I'll
say 11.
Yeah.
He's going under. It's like Price is Right.
And I'm going to do 10 just because I think Eric's being optimistic about the zaniness of it all. 10 seems more. 9 might even be more reasonable, but I'll go 10 just to undercut it.
Be brave. Go with 9. Come on.
No. I have no original thoughts. Well, I'm just going to win.
And it's true. And actually, you win. If it's 10, you win. If you go to 9, then you and Scott would have to share the spoils.
I don't want to do that. All right, it's time for our recommendations, things we're reading, watching, listening to, eating, or drinking that we recommend.
Yep,
who wants
to
go first?
I'm back on Amazon watching The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Yes,
the second season is out. Are you watching the second?
It holds up. It holds up. Just as good as the first.
And you know what struck me this time? It's a little more too vulgar for me, frankly, but some of the language.
Really?
Does it make you sound like a prude?
Says the man who said shithole earlier.
No, I'm sorry. Take that out, Ella.
They're flagging all of these.
Every time you guys do that, they
all jump up over here and go, oh, what are we going to do now?
But the thing about this show is, and it's from the creators of the Gilmore Girls, and you can see the relationship there with the patter of the conversation. But there's such a style to this show. It's such a choreography with the dialogue. I know you like Eric Sorkin, John. This is a different style, but it's just very stylistic, and that's what struck me. I really recommend it.
Yeah, I think
it.
They've settled down, too, because the problem I had with the first season is it didn't know if it was a dramedy, if it was exactly what it was. So there's a lot more confidence this season as well.
It's a good show.
Let me jump in and say, and Eric did not know I was going to say this, but I know that there are still, as of last night, there are tickets available for the last show of the Songs of Good Cheer.
Oh, thanks for saying that.
Eric Zorn and Mary Schmeek do this remarkable sing-along. And by the way, the cover of the program is fantastic.
Oh, it's beautiful. Beautiful.
And a collector's item.
Who drew that, Scott?
The little-known and underappreciated cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune did that.
Be with Scott Stantis, yeah. Wow.
But it really, it's the Sunday, it's at 4 o'clock. I believe there are tickets, like I said, there were tickets available last night. If you can go, it go. It is one of the most delightful evenings you will spend. It is one of my favorite things to do in the city for all 365 days. It is just tremendous. So, Songs of Good Cheer.
Oh, thanks, Scott. That's really
old school, old town school of folk music.
Yeah.
Okay.
4544 North Lincoln. Yeah, it's we had a great time last night. It was a great show.
It was a good show.
Yeah, and it's going to get, it only gets better as the week goes on. As the wrinkles. I want to sort of a little bit second the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. The production values on that are phenomenal for a TV show. The thing only I didn't get is I'm not sure, she doesn't strike me as all that funny. She's supposed to be a comedian, but she didn't strike me as all that funny. So I don't know.
She's supposed to be self-revelatory, which is the new comedy.
Ah, okay.
That was coming out.
Maybe a slightly older comedic style, but a really good one is this sort of political commentary monologue thing that like John Oliver does. The comedian Hasan Minhaj has got a series on Netflix. It's called Patriot Act. And it's really good. Hasan Minhaj is very funny. He's formerly The Daily Show. And it's on Netflix. And I think they had 7 or 8 episodes this season. And he covers a single topic, kind of the way John Oliver does a big sort of investigatory monologue. And it's really wonderful.
I'm going to recommend, I'll double down on Scott's recommendation. You may hear the breeze in the background. It's picking up as I'm joining the podcast from a poolside at the Iberostar Resort in Mexico. And the reason that my wife did not join me on this week getaway in Mexico for the show was that she did not want to miss Songs of Good Cheer with Eric Zorn, Mary Schmeek, and the gang from the Old Town School. And I'm not making that up. It is a wonderful tradition. If it's not part of your families, it should be. And maybe as you listen to this, you won't be able to get tickets to Sunday's show, the last show. But do get them for next year because it's just so good. It puts such a nice spirit in your heart. And the entertainment is outstanding, and you get to sing along. I'm going to recommend The Agent. My 40-year career making deals and changing the game. It's Lee Steinberg, the first Super Agents bestseller. It came out in hardback a few years ago. It's in paperback now. I've been reading it here on vacation. He's going to be in our studio next week. We'll talk about sports, his career, and you can get tickets to that conversation, by the way, by going to WGNradio.com. And for a $50 donation to the Salvation Army, you get lunch with us, and then you get to sit in the studio and even ask a question if you like. But it'll be an up-close and personal with Super Agent Lee Steinberg, the agent on whom Jerry Maguire was based. And some of the stories in this book are not only straight out of that movie, there's some stories in this book that are even better than the Jerry Maguire scenes. And one of my questions is going to be, why didn't you tell this? So that'll be Monday on the radio. You can still buy tickets to it. And his book is The Agent. Okay, is everybody in? We've all made our recommendations. And I guess that wraps it up, guys. Thanks for making the effort and coming into the studio. And that's Steve Bertrand, Scott Stantis, and Eric Zorn. The Mincing Rascals are engineered today by a couple of people. Who's back at the station doing it? From Bob Ferguson. Thank you, Fergie. And Bill Murdoch, our chief engineer, is here in Mexico. We're always produced by Elif Garris. And who else is doing it today? Ro Coleman is studio side in Chicago. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to the Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.